From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, let's talk about UFOs. Here's what's happening. Astronauts were awoken during the night to continue the hunt for an air leak on the International Space Station. That's not good. Crew members have been hunting for the source over the last several weeks. But the search was stepped up a notch when the size of the leak appeared to grow. This erroneous reading, however, turned out to have been caused by a temperature change on board the ISS. Analysis by ground teams traced the leak to the main work area inside a Russian ISS module there. So far, everything is okay. Cats can spread coronavirus to other pets and must stay indoors with their self-isolating owners, according to scientists, and they're warning people. The new research suggests that the cats can spread the deadly virus from one to another through their nose and mouth. American Airlines is the latest to announce plans to provide COVID-19 testing to passengers traveling to international destinations. The airline said it will offer testing to passengers traveling internationally, starting with guests flying to Jamaica and the Bahamas. The carrier will expand the testing in more international markets in weeks to come. In doing so, American Airlines joins carriers such as United, JetBlue, Airwaves and Hawaiian Airlines, which already offers tests to some passengers and pre-flight. Let's check in with Howard Bloom. He's been monitoring the COVID situation for us. Howard, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, the experts have long predicted that the fall would produce a new onslaught of the coronavirus and that the new wave would be more deadly because of the simultaneous assault of the ordinary flu. And the experts are probably right. In the Spanish flu of 1918, the first wave came in March, just like our coronavirus. The illness ebbed over the summer. Then it came back with a vengeance in October and killed far more than in its first attacks. There are hints that our second wave is approaching. Euronews reports that France, England, Poland, the Netherlands, and Spain are being hit by COVID resurgences. Euronews explains that France, for example, declared 16,096 new cases on Thursday, and the Netherlands, 3,001 yesterday, the highest figures they have recorded. But the real news is what's happening here in the USA, where we've had more coronavirus deaths than all the wars of the 20th century combined. There are signs that our second wave is coming. Reuters says that 22 American states had death increases last week. The states with the highest increases in deaths might surprise you. Alaska comes in at number one, Nebraska at number two, Missouri at number three, and Delaware at number four. Now, contrary to what we were told in the presidential debate last night, three out of four of these states are Republican. The race to be the state with the highest death toll for last week had Florida at number one, Texas at number two, California at number three, and Georgia at number four. Again, three out of four of these states were Republican. If you want to know how the new COVID cases are happening, look at a wedding reception August 7th in Millinocket, Maine, a town so small and so isolated that you'd think a simple family gathering would be absolutely safe. That happy ceremony was run in defiance of the law by a freedom-preaching Baptist pastor at the Big Moose Inn. It had 65 people in a state that limits indoor gatherings to 50. The result was 8 dead and 270 Jeez. COVID cases. That's just so far. They're still spreading. The Millinocket infections have spread as far as 220 miles to a nursing home and to a jail. But there's good news. On Friday of last week, President Trump held a briefing to announce that he was sending 3.3 million coronavirus tests of a brand new kind to states, to nursing homes, to disaster operations, to Indian reservations, to historically black colleges, and to public schools. These tests, says the New York Times, are Abbott's Binax Now, a small card that costs $5 and can yield results in 15 minutes using a shallow nasal swab and a color-coded line that indicates if you test positive. Reports the Times the government has signed a $760 million agreement to acquire a total of 150 million of these tests. Not enough for 327 million Americans, but a start. But there are problems. There are inadequate instructions on how to use the tests and when to use them. There's no federal reporting system to feed the information into epidemiological tracking systems so we can pinpoint outbreaks, focus on them, and get daily information to people like you and me. But with time, hopefully, we will learn. Now, the bottom line is that we will soon face a massive spike in COVID cases as we advance into the fall. But if we can get a handle on the use of the new test, we may be able to find those who were infected, isolate them, and slow the COVID spread.
Are you ready for the big debate with you and John Curtis next Thursday, Howard?
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm the moderator. I hope I do a better job than Chris Wallace did last night.
You do an excellent job. We'll see you next week.
You get ready, my friend. Howard Bloom, and we should have our Insta poll up after that where you can vote on which of the two you thought won the debate. Well, Mickey Mouse would be shaking his head right about now. Prolonged closures at Disney's California-based theme parks and limited attendance at its open parks has forced the company to lay off 28,000 employees across its parks, experiences, and consumer products division. Wow. Bankruptcies in the first 6 months of 2020, 18 retailers filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, with an additional 11 filing in July through mid-August. These defaults were concentrated in primarily the apparel and footwear, home furnishings, food, and department stores, with many prominent retailers filing during this time period, including Pier 1, J. Crew, Neiman Marcus, Stage Stores, JCPenney, Tuesday Morning, GNC, the supplement company, Lucky Brand, and so many others. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Mish, not a good sign, my friend.
The list goes on and on, George. Ann Taylor, Loft, Lane Bryant, Men's Warehouse, Joseph Banks, Steinmart. Oh, my gosh. And including in that list, I mean, JCPenney, Neiman Marcus, Lord & Taylor. I mean, these are mall anchor stores, George.
The malls are in trouble, Mitch. They're in trouble.
They are. And I wrote a post today on the death of the department stores. I mean, they've been in a slow decline because, I mean, they're just getting killed by the online retailers and Amazon, you know, and others. Even the general merchandise stores, they're doing okay, mainly in the COVID crisis, mainly because they were also able to sell food. I mean, Walmart got to stay open because they offered food in addition to all of the other merchandise they stored. But, you know, speaking of layoffs, we have potential mass airline layoffs. Actually, they're scheduled to start right now, October 1st.
That's right.
We're talking tens of thousands of airline layoffs because Congress could not get together and vote on a package. And it's not that I like layoffs or bailouts, I mean, but what are you going to do when you force these closures? Now, I'm looking at something that's going on right now in Chicago, George, that's kind of crazy. The mayor of Chicago, Lightfoot, has banned travel to Chicago from 22 states. So people are canceling hotel reservations, food reservations, and it's worse yet. I've got some friends, George, who went to Chicago from Wisconsin over the weekend. They track their license plate. They call up to see where they're working, why they were there, and they fine these people $450
yep.
a day.
Or quarantine them. It's crazy.
Crazy, George. Just crazy.
Time's got to end, Mish.
George, I don't know. And if I can get in one final comment.
Sure, go for it.
I watched the debate last night, and George, it was pitiful. I'm not going to tell you who I think won because both sides.
Let me tell you who lost. We did, as American people.
Absolutely. And imagine how this looked, George, to anybody overseas watching this. Actually, anybody in the U.S. even, just, you know, watching this thing. You know, Biden calling Trump a clown. Trump kept interrupting Trump. Trump kept interrupting Biden. Both of them back and forth refused to answer questions. Trump refused to criticize white supremacists. Biden refused to answer a question about packing the Supreme Court. Pitiful all around, George. Pitiful.
I'm not sure the debates 2 and 3 will happen. We shall see. Thank you, Mish.
I am woman. Hear me roar. In numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend.
Helen Reddy, the Australian singer whose global hit I Am Woman became a feminist anthem and who was the subject of a 2019 biopic of the same title, has died in Los Angeles. She was 78 years old. Boy, during her heyday, she was something else. In a moment, we're going to be talking about the new science, narcissism, with Dr. W. Keith Campbell on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about our special guest tonight for the first couple hours. First of all, many people believe that the more people who participate in the political process, the better it is for democracy. A new international study finds that the character of both politicians and the voters involved can undermine the process. The researchers say narcissistic people tend to take a more active role in politics, and their views don't necessarily put the country's interests first. Narcissism is a personality trait which combines selfishness, a feeling of entitlement, and the need for admiration. A series of three studies in the United States and Denmark reveals that individuals displaying higher levels of narcissism are more likely to want their voices heard in the political arena. When it comes to narcissistic voters, whose people tend to contact political officials, sign more petitions, donate to campaigns, and vote more often in midterm elections. Isn't that interesting? Well, our guest is back with us after about 6 years, Dr. W. Keith Campbell. Keith is a professor of psychology at the University of Georgia. He is the author of more than 100 scientific articles and several books. His work on narcissism has appeared in USA Today, Time, the New York Times. He was back with me on September 8th of 2014. Dr. Campbell has also made numerous radio and television appearances, including the Today Show and NPR's All Things Considered. He holds a BA from the University of California at Berkeley, MA from San Diego State University, PhD from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and his postdoctoral work was completed at Case Western Reserve University. Welcome back to Coast, W. Keith Campbell. Keith, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What an interesting book on narcissism, and I'm going to have you explain, beyond that little definition I just had, what is a narcissistic person?
Yeah, thanks for that intro, by the way. I think I know the paper you're talking about, and the way we talk about narcissism in that paper and the way you're thinking about it typically is a personality trait. It means that people can be high or low on it, and most people are somewhere in the middle. It has to do with a grandiose sense of yourself. You think you're a little better than you are, a little better than other people. A sense of entitlement. Maybe you think you deserve some special treatment and maybe deserve more credit than other people do. And sometimes some agency or charisma, you know, or extroversion or drive. So it's an interesting mix of somebody who's kind of entitled but also driven and ambitious and can be very likable and charming at the same time.
Is being a narcissist a bad thing?
You know, that form of narcissism is really a trade-off. It's good for getting dates. It's good for becoming a leader in the short term. It's not so good at keeping a long-term committed relationship. It's not so good at being a leader. So it's really kind of a trade-off because it has some of those benefits of your self-promotion and self-aggrandizement and, you know, energized extroversion. So it can be good or bad.
When you look at the word and you hear it, it sounds horrible, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, people use it in this pejorative way, and the reason for that is because in your own life, people who are narcissistic really do a lot of damage. So people have had narcissistic, you know, spouses or parents or bosses, and these people do horrible damage because they're willing to exploit you or take advantage of you. So it's not a trait we really like in people, but it has a trade-off to it, and there's a reason narcissism's around.
out of 10 people, Keith, how many you think walking around are narcissists?
You know, there's really no perfect cutoff for it. When we're talking about a trait, it's really just this continuum. When we're talking about the clinical disorder, which is narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD, this is the, you know, the psychiatric condition where narcissism is so extreme and inflexible that it messes up your life. It ruins your relationships, ruins your work. Those numbers are about 1 or 2%.
Oh, that's low. That's pretty low. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're talking about it being a real clinical condition, it's relatively rare. When you're talking about people who are just sort of full of themselves and vain and attention seeking, and it's pretty common, but it's not everybody.
What creates the narcissist? Does it happen when you're a little kid? What happens?
You know, it's a mix, and I'll tell you, you find with most personality traits that about 50 or 60%, with narcissism, it looks like about 60% is heritable, meaning it seems to come from parents genetically or some other way we don't understand yet, but it's in the genes. About 10% has to do with parenting itself that seems to be traced to how the kids are parented, and the rest seems to do with just random stuff in the environment. And in terms of parenting, what you see with narcissism is that parents, you know, kids who are overpraised or put on a pedestal or, you know, sort of these permissive parents lead to more grandiose narcissism. And when you find parents who are more hostile or abusive, cold parents, you find a form of narcissism that we call vulnerable narcissism, where the kids become entitled, but also real fragile, and their self-esteem goes up and down, and you know, they're easily threatened. So you can kind of get either parenting can lead to different aspects of narcissism, but it's not the biggest force. It seems genetics and just sort of luck or random things in life are the two big factors.
You've written about two sides of narcissism, one being grandiose and the other being called vulnerable narcissism. What's the difference between those two?
Yeah, so the big difference is, when most of us are thinking about narcissism and, you know, we're talking about like political engagement in the paper you're talking about or in leadership, we're talking about this grandiose form of narcissism. It's out there and in your face. And we see that. There's another form which is it has the same amount of entitlement and self-centeredness, but these individuals have lower self-esteem. They're not very confident. They can be somewhat shy and introverted and anxious. Sometimes they're called covert narcissists because you can't see it, or living in your mom's basement narcissists because, you know, they're kind of hiding in the basement thinking they should get special treatment that, you know, they never got. And so what happens is people who are more vulnerably narcissistic end up in therapy for depression or something. And so therapists see the more vulnerable kinds, and then if you're dating, you see the more grandiose kinds because they're out there hitting on you.
Does the person who's involved with a narcissist realize that, or do they find that out later? How long does it take?
Yeah, it's definitely something that happens over time typically. So there's usually a pattern where you start off with somebody. So you're dating somebody grandiose, and often people like this are very attractive. You know, I dated grandiose narcissists when I was younger, and, you know, find people are charming and confident and really likable, and you start dating, and it's great. And usually in relationships, what happens is you go from that initial stage of sort of excitement and fun, and then it transitions to more emotional intimacy and caring, really getting to committed to the relationship. And when that stage happens, the narcissist just bails.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, don't. The commitment.
They can't commit.
Yeah, the commitment really isn't that interesting to them. So they either bail or they stick around, but they're cheating. Their head's not in it, and the relationship falls apart. So it's this transition, and so people usually don't see the narcissism at the beginning. Where they see it is when they start seeing that this commitment isn't happening. Instead, this person is being, you know, game playing or manipulative or controlling, and, you know, things just start going awry at that point.
Are men more narcissists than women?
Yes, in a grandiose form of narcissism, men are, and in the clinical form, men are more. It's not a huge difference, but it's definitely a difference.
Stay with us, Keith. We've got more to talk about. I love this subject. I can't wait to get phone calls next hour with you to see what we're going to have. Maybe a narcissist might call us too. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, and welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. W. Keith Campbell with us. Keith's website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, talking about the latest book, The New Science of Narcissism. Keith, does a narcissist have to have all the traits, or maybe they could just have one or two?
Oh, no. I mean, narcissism is always a kind of a combination of traits with different amounts. And when you talk about it clinically, they'll give you, you know, 9 specific descriptors, and they give you a number 5 of 9. So there's a real specific number in the clinical level. But really, these traits go together, and some people have more than others. So, for example, a trait like vanity, like being really into your appearance. Some people are narcissistic or really vain, others not so much. But in general, people who are narcissistic are just sort of more focused on looking attractive and high-end status.
Well, I was going to say, I know an attorney here in St. Louis who is pretty prominent here, and he has to have the latest clothes, the latest shoes, the latest tie. He's meticulous with his clothes. Now, is that a narcissist, or does he just like style?
That's the other thing, is you can be somebody who's really into fashion, and you're into it because you're just really, you know, it's really a design thing, or it's some other reason. So it doesn't just have to be attention seeking or status seeking. But if somebody who's really into fashion and really into status and really into having lots of shallow relationships with people and was somewhat dishonest in business dealings, I think, well, maybe that person's a little bit narcissistic.
What about social media? With all this stuff happening right now with the use of our smartphones, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all these things. Has that contributed to this?
It is just, I mean, that's just such a can of worms. So back when Facebook started, you know, we first looked at narcissism. And what we found was that people who were narcissistic had more friends on Facebook. They just had more connections. And they promoted themselves more. They had more attractive photos. They had more attractive, you know, more self-promoting content on their Facebook page. And since then, people have looked at this a lot. And it looks over and over that people on social media, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or, you know, one of the Chinese sites, they tend to have more friends or followers on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to spend more attention, you know, putting out more selfies. They tend to put more, you know, attention into their appearance, tend to talk about how successful they are. So there's a lot of attention paid to self-promotion on social media with narcissism. The second question, though, is does social media make people narcissistic?
Right.
And that doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, at least it doesn't seem to be something we can find. It seems to be that people who are narcissistic really like social media, and it's reinforcing for them. So they, you know, if you really think you're attractive and you take a selfie, it's easy and it feels great. But people who aren't as narcissistic find it harder. So if you don't feel that good about yourself and you take a selfie, it's kind of hard. You don't look how you look, and so people are getting kind of depressed on social media.
And I got to tell you, with COVID-19, Keith, I think social media has helped a lot of people because of this isolation that's involved with it.
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, I think things like, you know, Zoom or any of those sites, FaceTime, where people can actually just communicate face-to-face is better than being, you know, just over the phone or isolated. And social media, I'm going to say, social media isn't bad. It's the same way if I look on your television screen, you're going to see more narcissism than you would in a normal place in the world.
Does a narcissist know they're a narcissist?
Yes. That was one of those questions that I think we struggled with as a field for a long time. But people who are narcissistic have some awareness of that. They're like, yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I kind of think I'm a big deal. It's kind of how I am. People tell me that. They also, this is a newer finding, but they also seem to have some awareness that, you know, being self-centered causes problems. And this is something we thought, well, maybe people just oblivious to it. But there seems to be awareness of this, at least in a lot of people. It seems like what's going on is people just say, you know what, if the choice is between me and somebody else, I'll just pick myself.
Can you tell if you meet someone, you personally, if they're a narcissist or not?
I don't have any magic powers. I look for some cues maybe, but I'm not sure. Often with me, I find if I really like somebody, I meet somebody and they seem really confident, like, I go, man, I like that guy. We sort of go, I better be a little bit of a red flag, you know. But I mean, that's how much I think narcissism can be really attractive when you first meet it. But you know, I look for things like how people treat other people, not so much how they treat me, because I'm a professor, so people are nice to me because I have some status. But, you know, how they treat a waiter for the restaurant, how they treat Uber driver, and how they treat people lower in status. Look at how the conversations go around, how they're talking about themselves, and, you know, things like that. But I don't have any radar.
Is narcissism a disorder?
You know, it's a thing that I think is really, when we're talking about the individual, it's just a way people, it's a character style, it's a way people exist, and it's something that works for us at some degree. So narcissism is something that's probably a trade-off, because it's really useful in social situations, it's really good in competitive situations, it's, you know, good in some context, and it's not good in order in others. But I think when it becomes so extreme that you can't turn it off, so maybe like when you can be tough on the court, but when you go home, you're still kind of being tough with people.
Right. You can't turn it off.
You can't turn it off. You're just at the market, and you're competing with people at the market. You're like, come on, man, turn it off. You can't turn it off. And that's when it becomes more of a disorder. When it's just too extreme and you can't control it.
Do narcissists like themselves?
You know, it really depends on the form. So with the grandiose form of narcissism, it seems to be they do like themselves. And there is an idea that was very common, still very common, that, well, deep down inside, people who are more grandiose narcissists don't like themselves. So maybe they say they're awesome, but deep down they feel ashamed, or they really, you know, think they're a bad person. We haven't really found evidence of that. So it seems like narcissists who are grandiose really like themselves on the surface, and deep down they kind of like themselves too. The more vulnerable form of narcissism, it seems to be that they just don't like themselves that much, but they often have grandiose fantasies. So in general, they have low self-esteem. They, you know, think they're not as great. They're not getting as respected as much as they should be. People don't like them as much. They're not noticed as much as they should be. But at the same time, they sometimes have fantasies about, you know, having high status, mm-hmm. or having success or fame or power or money. So there you have much more negative self-views.
Can you have those successes and be a narcissist?
Oh, for sure.
You can.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can be, there's many successful narcissists. There's many successful psychopaths in the world. I mean, there's many of them, unfortunately. And people do very well with that more grandiose quality. Sometimes people ask, like, well, if you're president, or, you know, if you're, you know, a great person, is it really narcissism? And the answer is, I think, yeah, if you're always thinking about yourself and how much your ego matters, it's narcissism. Whether you're a football star or you're, you know, a kind of a high school coach, either way, if your ego involved, it's got some narcissism to it.
I don't want to knock the guy, but would you say President Trump is a narcissist? Because he fits some of these traits mentioned.
Absolutely, but there's very different perspectives of Trump. So We did a couple studies on this, but one of our grad students, and we had people rate the personality of Trump using these very specific personality traits, and we were able to convert those into narcissism. And we had Trump supporters and Hillary Clinton supporters rate Trump. And what we found is that both Trump and Clinton supporters thought, Trump is kind of a bold, brash, narcissistic character. That's mm-hmm. what he is. That's, no one doubts it. But Clinton supporters see Trump as, very self-centered, very unstable, very incompetent. So sort of a dangerous, out of control, self-centered narcissist.
Do you have to be a narcissist to support the narcissist?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. If that were the case, no one would support anyone. But the Trump supporters see Trump as somebody who is patriotic, who is competent, who is like an aggressive, successful businessman.
I have a friend, Keith, who sold his business. Very successful businessman, very successful. And he knows Donald Trump very well. And he claims that he's one of the greatest guys he's ever known. Now, the guy I know is a great guy. He's happy. He's generous. I've seen him help people. But he says that this president is one of the greatest presidents who would ever rule or be a president if they just let him. But in terms of who he is, he just thinks the world of him. So, well, what do you say about that?
Well, the challenge with somebody like a public figure like Donald Trump is we're not rating his personality. We're rating his public persona, his public personality.
Right.
His
right.
mask.
How he comes across.
Right, he comes across. I don't know him. And the thing you find with Donald Trump is he's very private. I've never met him. The only, and the only chance I talked to somebody who worked on The Apprentice. That's as close as I've ever got to Donald Trump.
Huh.
So it's hard to really get to know somebody like that if there is this side that comes out. I've heard stories about it from people like you're telling me, of this sort of generosity. And I've heard stories of meanness. So I've heard both sides from different people, but it's very hard for me to know the truth. I just don't know. I'm basically just using people to rate a public figure.
If a narcissist knows that he or she is one, should they fix that? And if they do, what do they fix?
Yeah, I think it's something that if people want to change, it's worth changing. In terms of what to fix, one of the biggest challenges with narcissism is the interpersonal costs. It's if you're narcissistic, how do you keep your marriage together? If you're a narcissistic boss, how do you do business, or how do you keep your employees around? How do you do business with other people if they can't trust you? If you're boorish at parties and, not fun to be around. And so where you want to do a lot of the work with narcissism yourself is not so much focusing on, you've got dreams and you want to be great and you're really proud of yourself and you want to go out there and kick butt. I'm like, great, do that. But really focus on being a nice person, being a decent human being, having some compassion and treating people well. And if you just do that, if you just make the effort to be a decent person, that's gonna solve a lot of your narcissism problems right there. And if that's not enough, the other thing to do is just really focus on taking responsibility for what you do. When you make mistakes, when you take advantage of people, take responsibility for it and apologize. If you just do something like that, you can have your dreams, you can have your ambition. It's not gonna destroy you the way it will if you're cruel and mean and exploitative to others.
Would you say there's anything shocking in the book, The New Science of Narcissism?
I don't know. No, it is shocking, isn't it? I don't do true crime. I don't know if anything I say is shocking. I think it's I hope it's interesting, but not shocking.
I found it to be fascinating.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Who came up with the word narcissism?
You know, it's an old term that goes back to the Greek myth of Narcissus, and the story is Narcissus was this attractive Greek who fell in love with his own image in a body of water, lake, or river, and died. He drowned and turned into a flower in some stories called the Narcissus now. That's what we call it, the daylily in Narcissus. And that term from Narcissus was used first by this British sexologist who was named Havelock Ellis back in the late 1800s, and then Freud took it, Sigmund Freud, and wrote about it really at the beginning of the 1900s. And Freud is the person who really made it a popular term in the language.
That's his amazing work. W. Keith Campbell with us, the book. Where do people get the book, Keith?
You can get it at your local bookstore, Amazon, online, any place you can find books.
We're going to take calls next hour. And if does a narcissist know they're a narcissist? Let me ask you that again.
I think, and they there seems to be some self-awareness. Yeah, if you give people, like, really simple questions, how narcissistic are you? They'll say, people who are narcissistic will say they're more narcissistic.
Give me a test. You, as the psychologist, I'm in your room, I'm on the couch, and find out if I'm a narcissist. Just do what you do.
I don't. I mean, I use very structured I use very structured, scientifically sound personality questionnaires.
Okay, so you can't do it just talking to me, asking me questions.
No, we actually put together a website, narcissismlab.com, that we put some of these questionnaires on. But there's really a science to this measurement. That you can do it well, and if you're going to ask somebody about it, it's usually, you'd focus on something like sense of entitlement and need for attention or need for admiration and, those kind of things.
Well, who doesn't want that?
Well, that's the thing. That's why it's a normal trait, meaning that most people are sort of narcissists, some narcissism, and, some people have a lot. And that's where you get into some issues. And some people are really on the lower end, and there might be some issues down there as well.
I mean, I used to love in grade school getting an A in a science project, having my dad tell me, oh, George, that was fantastic. Good for you. I mean, I loved hearing that.
Yeah, well, so what you're talking about there is honestly earned status through achievement, and you're talking about what we talk is solid self-esteem or solid confidence.
Right.
That's authentic self-esteem. You went out there, you performed, your father said, hey, you performed. He was telling you the truth. He wasn't like, don't worry, you got an 80, but only go talk to the teacher and bribe him and make it 100. And so your father appropriately gave you a reward, and you thought, I feel great. I mean, that's authentic self-esteem. That's what we kind of dream happens to our kids.
So that's not being narcissistic.
No, that's being healthy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's healthy.
So there's a fine line here, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, they go together because people who are narcissistic have some self-esteem. But if you're saying, I got 100 and I'm the best in class and I'm better than everyone else and, Keith, let me tell you, I got 100, but my friend Jim, he got a 90. He's kind of an idiot. I crushed him. I just thought I'd tell you about that.
That's being a narcissist.
Yes, exactly. And then you lose friends. I don't like you.
So cutting line, is a narcissist somewhat mean to people?
Yes, it's that interpersonal meanness, callousness, willingness to exploit people, take advantage of them. That's where you get into the trouble with narcissism.
Can they change?
Yes. Yeah. What we've found in the last, 10 years or so of looking at personality, maybe a little more, is that personality can change throughout the lifespan. People used to think it was really fixed. And what we see with narcissism is that it can change as well. The challenge is really how to do it. And, in the more clinical cases, therapy seemed to work. But there's a real problem getting people into therapy and staying in therapy.
That's a good point. Keith, we're going to take a quick break, but we will come back for an hour of phone calls with you. The name of the book is The New Science of Narcissism. Make the call. We'll be back.